Hello. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 7th of August 2015. Extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom Williams. And your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. We're all feeling quite jolly today because we were talking about the cricket last yesterday. And so let's hope that we continue on a nice confident mood.
Yes.
The main headlines this week, are they going to drag us down? I don't know. Centre's sporting chance, celebrities' uni job, and zero tolerance for fair drugs. Oh, please, Michael, could we please have the first headline?
Right, it's the Centre's sporting chance. A £29 million state-of-the-art sports centre for Winchester has taken a huge leap forward after investors threw their weight behind an idea to build it in Bar End. 2 years after dismissing the idea as unaffordable, civic chiefs have also done a U-turn and admitted that the crumbling River Park Leisure Centre will most likely be replaced by a larger facility on the outskirts of the city after all. The news will be welcomed by campaigners who say the city's sports facilities are not good enough. However, it's too early to say whether the new sports hub will be of Olympic standards that many are calling for. The new sports hub, expected to cost between £27 and £29 million, could include a 50-metre swimming pool, a 12-court sports hall, and new tennis and squash facilities. The development marks a turnaround for Winchester City Council, which had branded the scheme unaffordable in 2013 and controversially opted to rebuild the River Park on parts of the nearby tennis courts and green space. The resulting Save the Wreck campaign, part of a march of more than 1,000 people against council development practices last year, was vindicated when Cabinet scrapped the plans in December. Winchester's creaking sports centre could also be rebuilt on the current North Wall site or refurbished at the cut price of £4.6 million under options considered by a new financial appraisal. Councillor leader, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, said, "There's a lot of good reasons why we should deliver an exciting and ambitious centre to provide public leisure facilities for Winchester and the Olympic legacy in one, and is one." Excuse me. "Just as important is the fact we have a growing community that needs more leisure facilities close to where they live. I'm expecting the report to Council in September to say, in the light of the latest financial report, there's a preferred option, Bar End, which we will develop into a more detailed business case. That's the conclusion of the report, although that won't be the final decision." City chiefs say potential funding partners, including Winchester University, the Pinder Trust and Hampshire Council, County Council, are attracted by room for expansion offered at Bar End. The university, which runs a 3.5 million athletic stadium next to the site, is expected to be the biggest backer for the project, expected to cost between, as it said, £27 million and £29 million. Professor Neil Marriott, Deputy Vice-Chancellor, said, "A new sports centre at Bar End would greatly enhance Winchester sports facilities, and it has a good location, just off the motorway and near to park and ride facilities." Councillor Godfrey said, "The financial report, kept from public scrutiny due to commercial confidentiality, suggests the centre be built east of the athletics track, potentially removing the need to buy the 1.8 million garrison ground from supermarket giant Tesco. Options to build at North Walls, refurbish River Park, or move to Nip to Bar End, with or without the Tesco land, will be put to Cabinet on September the 9th.
Celebrity's uni job. He's the much-loved green-fingered TV star who is set for pastures new as he takes up a post at the University of Winchester. Gardening expert, writer and broadcaster Alan Titchmarsh has been appointed Chancellor, stepping into the shoes of Dame Mary Fagan, who retired after nearly a decade in the role. Mr. Titchmarsh, 66, said he is delighted to work with the university, who gave him an honorary degree in 2007. He said, "I've long admired both the university's academic standing and its inclusive ethos, and I am hugely looking forward to working closely with the Vice-Chancellor to make sure that the university continues to maintain its reputation and goes from strength to strength. It will be a challenging role, but one that I shall relish." The gardening guru was made an MBE in 2000 for services to horticulture and broadcasting. In 2001, he became a Deputy Lieutenant of Hampshire and is patron to more than 50 charities. He has also written 9 novels and more than 50 gardening books and is the first ambassador and Royal Horticultural Society Vice President. Professor Joy Carter, Vice Chancellor of the University, said, "We are all excited to welcome Alan Titchmarsh as our new Chancellor. He brings with him a wealth of experience, and I am sure he will have a positive impact on all aspects of university life. I very much look forward to working with him." She added, "We owe Dame Mary a huge debt for her magnificent service and loyalty. Her last official engagement as Chancellor was in April, when she presided over an honorary graduation ceremony for former students as part of our 175th anniversary. I'm delighted that Dame Mary will continue her association as Chancellor Emeritus."
Emeritus.
"Mr. Titchmarsh will be installed as Chancellor in October." And there are 2 photographs with this article. One of Alan Titchmarsh looking very debonair in his cap and gown with his honorary degree. And a second, more familiar pose in a garden with lots of flowers.
Zero tolerance for fair drugs. Hampshire police are warning revellers of their zero tolerance on drugs at this year's Winchester Boomtown Fair after the deaths of 2 women in recent years. They've been working with festival organisers, ensuring this year goes as smoothly and safely as possible, maintaining what they've called a robust position on drugs and legal highs. Last year, Lisa Williamson of Hereford was found hanged in a toilet before being rushed to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and pronounced dead. The 31-year-old mum was at the event with her husband Darren when she took toxic levels of amphetamines, and in 2013, 18-year-old Ellie Rowe died after taking the Class C drugs ketamine, more commonly used as a horse tranquilizer. Extra measures have been taken to allow for the extra 10,000 people expected after Boomtown's application for a larger premises licence was granted last year. Nearly 50,000 people are expected to flock to Winchester on Thursday, making it one of the most popular festivals in the south of England. Superintendent James Fulton, police commander for Boomtown Fair, said, "We will be maintaining a robust position on both drugs and legal highs or new psychoactive substances, all of which are banned from the site. If you are found with drugs, you will be at the very least ejected from the site and barred from returning, and there is a good chance you will be arrested or prosecuted. Even just dabbling in illegal drugs and psychoactive substances can have catastrophic more fatal consequences. You might believe you'll be fine, but how do you know? The only way to be certain is to not to take any at all. Festival organisers have also been forced to take action to combat noise complaints. In 2014, the fair was probed by the City Council over alleged licence breaches of noise conditions, including excessive noise and music played after the 4 a.m. curfew, forcing organisers to buy specialist equipment to measure the sound around the bowl. A City Council spokesman said, "The Council will actively monitor compliance with the licence conditions. Any breaches will be investigated and action taken."
And now here are the death notices. The deaths in this week's Hampshire Chronicle. Barton, Barbara Ann Barton, aged 61. Court, Keith Court, peacefully at home, aged 77. Duckett, Patricia Ann Duckett, aged 73. Fielder, Mervyn Fielder, aged 76. Green, Margaret Joan Green, former mayoress of Winchester, aged 93. Hunt, Elizabeth Hunt, aged 85. Parker, Stephen Parker, suddenly at home, aged 47. Reeves, Mick Reeves, aged 55. Sims, Suzanne Sims, aged 60. Tabbitt, Tom Tabbitt. Thomas, Dorothy Thomas, after a brave battle against cancer. And finally, Williams, Mary Kathleen Williams. And now we'll go over to Christian Comment, please, read by Maria.
And Christian Comment this week is written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy and is titled, "Let's Open Up Marriage to More People." In The Marriage, the priest-poet R.S. Thomas describes with a devastating beauty the pathos of a 50-year marriage. Love's moment in a world in servitude to time. This column is submitted on my 25th wedding anniversary, and it's hard to believe our own servitude to time. Where did those years go? The early church writer, Tertullian, describes marriage as the seminary of the human race, so equating the married life to a college where priests are trained. It's a wonderful image suggesting that a life lived with a partner is a life that gives space, generosity, and encouragement to reflect upon the purpose of life and our relationship with God. That is not to suggest that those who are married are always closer to God. Often it seems that the opposite would be true. The demanding immediacy of family life seems to squeeze out the eternal. Those who are single may more easily find time to pray or don't have to squeeze in both rugby and church on a Sunday morning. The dedication of many single parents often seems closer to the God who is love than their married counterparts. However, it is the married life which has deeply shaped my understanding of God, my life as a priest, and my relationship with my children. I have been blessed and continue to be blessed by the close relationship and friendship that now goes back more than 25 years. There is a contemporary debate within the church over the nature of marriage. Does it have to be the union of a woman and a man, or is the gender unimportant? Our traditional Book of Common Prayer says of marriage that first it was ordained for the procreation of children. However, in our contemporary service, marriage is first described as the place where we grow together in love and trust, and even places the birth of children in optional brackets. The drifting emphasis away from procreation and modern society's affirming of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender recognition and rights means that gender takes a secondary role in civil marriage and is being debated in church marriage. Personally, I support equal marriage and would want to enable more to experience the blessings of a married life, regardless of gender. Our traditional marriage service says that we can be like brute beasts that have no understanding. Let's open the civilizing effect of marriage to more people. There is a cost to loving, and so often that cost is grief. All marriages will one day end, either by separation or death, and we must never forget those who mourn the loss of their partner. Orest Thomas's poem concludes, "And she who in life had done everything with a bird's grace, opened her bill now for the shedding of one sigh no heavier than a feather." It's a shattering description of a deathbed scene and recalls the support and care we need to offer those who are grieving.
Yes. Let us go on to letters to the editor. And please, could we have the first letter, Michael?
Come on, I've found it. Excuse me. I thought it was historical next.
No, sorry, it's letters to the editor.
A bit of a rattle.
He'll get there.
I'll get there. What can I do for it? Oh, yes. Oh, there's a nice heading here. Police state, it says. All questions. Sir, I have an elderly neighbour who was questioned at length by the police for having a quiet drink in the evening in the park opposite where he lived. He even had to show identification. I have another neighbour who was threatened with arrest for non-payment of a small fine, which was not his fault. I'm beginning to think we're living in a police state. And this comes from E. Mayer, who lives in Chester Road, Winchester.
Town now huge. Sir, having lived in Andover 40 years ago, I set off with confidence last week for an appointment at the Andover War Memorial Hospital. Heavens, what a nightmare! Andover has at least quadrupled in size since I lived there in the 70s. And the quiet suburbs that I remember are now subsumed into vast new roads and roundabouts. Andover, like Newbury and Basingstoke, used to be a small market town, but it seems that all three have fallen victim to the unstoppable clamour for housing and commercial development. I had hoped that because of Winchester's special place in history, it might be spared and allowed to remain small. But sadly, our council seems unwilling to stop the advancing juggernaut. The next victim will be the area around our pretty little railway station, the open spaces and car parks around it, providing a mouth-watering gift to developers in waiting. Sadly, aesthetics are not high on the council's list of priorities. Rosemary Pool, St James Villas, Winchester.
Bake off, hurrah! Sir, it seems the nights are already drawing in much quicker than I would like, but there's one thing that signals that summer's on the way out. It is the return of the football season. Myself, I'm far more excited about the return of the wonderful Mary Berry on our TV screens with the much-loved Great British Bake Off, and that's name and address supplied.
I can't even give their name to that one.
This one is about Legacy for Cecil, and it comes from John Duckworth, the old Butcher's Arms, Nether Wallop in Stockbridge. Sir, the publicity attaching to the exploits of a Dr. Walter Palmer, whose ill-aimed arrow caused Cecil the Lion some 40 hours of agony before the party caught up with him, no doubt less to end his pain than to take his head, will, I hope, cause a great number of us to focus on the plight of animals in the wild and persuade us to give legacies and immediate gifts to one or other of the several major charities for their benefit. I myself have recast my will to that end, which the government assists by the form of tax relief. Dr. Palmer sought the help of public relations experts who said he had bought a very expensive license to stick an arrow into a lion, but this is just a form of self-indictment. The aid of such experts is really needed by the Association of Minnesota Dental Surgeons, lest the expression "as welcome as a Minnesota dentist" is incorporated into the language as a record of how unacceptable such non-dental activities as his are to modern society. And that's from John Duckworth.
Sir, please be aware if you visit France on holiday. Firstly, if you are on a bike, and this also applies to push bikes, the roads are being littered with very dangerous hidden obstructions under the guise of safety. For example, a high-angled line of blocks that in the rain or at night cannot be seen, and frequently paint on the road that is very slippery. We are aware of many accidents and currently are in the process of taking our mari to court in a small village with less than 3,000 inhabitants, and the bailiff has itemised over 100 infractions. Secondly, the so-called traffic regulators, police and gendarmerie, are using kit to catch speedsters. Some of the kit is being used by incompetence, the money being collected by big business. Lies will be told, and one certain ferry company has its bookings inspected, searched for offenders. These said offenders will be stopped at the ferry port on their departure, returned to a bank to extract the exact monies for the amende. Invariably, you will miss the ferry. If you have no available cash, the car may be impounded from the cash point, not the ferry, until you turn up with said cash and you have to get back to the ferry. Name and address are supplied.
Oh dear, they're really cross.
Sad at MP's scrounger comment. Sir, I'm a musician who's been playing instrumental guitar on Winchester High Street for the past 5 years. On Saturday, July the 18th, National Busking Day, I was asked by the BBC Today programme to give a live interview at the BBC studio in Winchester, which I did, along with Kirsten McClure, who busks on the London Underground and who was in the London studio. Apart from a couple of mistakes on their part, not getting my name right and saying I bust in Worcester instead of Winchester, it went okay. Many people contacted me afterwards saying, well done. Imagine my sadness then when this morning I was apparently trolled on Twitter by Rebecca Turner, a so-called MP, saying, in reference to my Diary of a Busker website stroke book, Diary of a Scrounger stroke beggar, get a job. I'd be interested in knowing what many Winchester, who hopefully enjoy listening to me, think about her remarks. That's from Marvin Bree Naylor, Greenhill Road, Winchester.
This letter from David Percy. It's called Car Park Warning. Sir, I wish to put your readers on guard regarding the unforeseen difficulties they may face when visiting out-of-town stores. Most have restrictions on the length of time you can park, and most of us accept that if parking is in excess of this permitted period, then a penalty charge is applied and enforced by a parking company. Be very careful. However, if you make two visits, especially if your first time of arrival and the time of your last departure would be outside the permitted period, you may have difficulty in proving that you did so. This was my experience at Home Base Car Park in Winchester, where the permitted time is 2 hours and the entrance and exits are camera controlled. I made two visits, both only for a few minutes, Yet a week later or so, I received a parking charge notice demanding £100 and alleging that I had parked for 169 minutes. The supplied evidence was a timed photograph of my car entering and another timed photograph of it exiting the car park, but not the two in between. Fortunately, my bank statement, which shows two transactions that day at home base, supports my claim. I suspect that other customers might not be in that position, especially if they made small cash purchases or were just browsing. So, if you make more than one visit in a short period, keep those receipts. That's from David Piercy, who lives in Headbourneworthy.
And this letter is from Sylvia Robinson. Sir, may I, through your paper, say a very big thank you to the lady and gentleman who came out of their house and the two ladies who were behind me when I fell in Parchment Street on Wednesday, July the 15th. Also to the ambulance, casualty and X-ray staff for all their help and kindness. My sincere thanks, Sylvia Robinson, North Road, Kingsworthy.
Don't write, talk. Sir, to the fellow motorist who waited until I'd gone to put a note on my windscreen at Almer Road Car Park, Romsey, on Monday, 27th of July, on my return I was unable to read it because it had rained. However, I'm there most Mondays at that time if you'd like to speak to me in person. And that's name and address supplied.
And that's the end of the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836, emailing... I've got a gap. What is it? It's hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we come to the historical news, starting with 200 years ago.
200 years ago, August the 7th, 1815, and it's headed, "The King of Kandy is caught by the British." Intelligence was received by the government of the capture of the King of Kandy, who has been long a ferocious and barbarous enemy of the British nation in that quarter of the globe. He was taken prisoner after his troops were totally defeated by the British and the native Indian forces sent against them. His power is at an end, and his territories have been annexed to our Indian possessions. The King of Kandy, barbarously put to death by the most cruel tortures, several British officers who were sent to him on a political mission. A next item. A part of the Allied troops in the direction of Orleans have marched for Normandy. A great number of peasants of Alsace who have been prisoners have passed through the Schaffhausen. Some seditious cries were heard at Bourg on the passage of Cardinal Fesch and the mother of Bonaparte through the town. The Allied troops quartered there terminated these disorders.
We get quite a lot of the Bonaparte, of course, with the thing of Waterloo. You know,
it's yes, the, oh, it's a bit it, more, is there?
No. I mean, it keeps coming each week.
Oh, I see. I haven't on that.
And 100 years ago, August the 7th, 1915, German advances halted by Russians. While the Germans continued to advance both north and south of Warsaw, the Russians still seemed to hold them west of the city itself. The Russian dispatch issued mentions... The Russian dispatch issued mentions the repulse of an enemy attack northwest of Blonny. And in the latest German report, there is a marked absence of any mention of an advance in this quarter. On the other hand, the Russians admit the evacuation of Lublin and the Austrians announce that their troops have occupied it. The Austrian forces in this region have fought for a month without any success, evidence that the Russian withdrawal is voluntary. And the second item... Winchester shared in the Empire celebration of the anniversary of the declaration of war by Great Britain against Germany on Wednesday. A fitting note was struck by the solemn service of intercession held in the cathedral at noon. The great feature was the spontaneity with which people assembled. There was nothing in the way of wide publicity given to the fact that such a service was to be held. But by 11:30, there were so many people waiting for admission to the choir, and long before 12 o'clock, every chair in this part of the cathedral was taken.
And now for 50 years ago, on August 7, 1965, MP appeals for more roads construction. Considerable time was devoted to roads during the third reading of the Consolidated Fund Appropriation Bill in the House of Commons on Monday. Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, MP, Winchester, described this as a nationwide problem before going on to mention certain aspects affecting Hampshire. He said that Hampshire's road problems were particularly pressing and pointed out the vast increase in population which was in train, the industrial expansion and the severe backlog which had prevailed in road building in the recent years. Hampshire's percentage increase in grants for road construction has been appreciably lower than the national average since 1958, he said. And the second item is, the County Council's Association is to receive a report from Hampshire County Council which is an attempt to control the increasing amount of promotional advertising at petrol filling stations, including banners advertising trading stamps. The CCA will be requested to consider what immediate action should be taken to deal with clutter at petrol filling stations and how the present regulations should be amended to secure a more effective and simplified system of control. The report was prepared after South East Area Planning Committee had expressed their concern at the proliferation of freestanding signs and advertisement displays on petrol filling stations.
The next piece comes from 25 years ago, August 3rd, 1990. Winchester has spent the past 2 years looking like a building site, city traders have declared, and now they want a break from the construction work. They have called on the City Council to delay the proposed repaving and pedestrianisation so that disruption can be kept to a minimum. Shopkeepers and residents have put forward their views at public meetings held by the Chamber of Commerce. Extended pedestrianisation of the city centre, including paving between Jury Street and Colebrook Street, was top of the agenda. Two new areas of paving are to be laid either side of the existing precinct. Sustenance for shoppers in Winchester. Eagerly awaited new city centre retail complex will come from 6 catering units ranging in size from 1,370 square feet to 4,300 square feet. The units will complement the 55 new shops now under construction, served by 350 parking spaces and linked to the city's existing shops by pedestrian precincts. The Brooks, a development on 2 levels, has been promoted by Winchester City Council to inject new life into an historic city. Its high-class profile has been assured by the signing of Beale's, the department store, as anchor tenant.
And, Michael, can I prevail you to go on with the editorial comments?
Certainly,
please?
I'd be pleased. Thank you. Yes, it's a repeat of our first article.
Yes, it
the first hurdle cleared for new sports centre. News that Bar End has emerged as the most likely site for a new leisure centre will be welcomed by many. It comes after years of lobbying by sports clubs and protests from residents who fiercely protected their green space from development. No decisions have been made, and there is much to be done before the council reaches that stage. Residents will be keen to discover what will become of the River Park site should the sports centre move south. Council leader Stephen Godfrey has said that full Olympic facilities are possible at Bar End. It is in the interest of Winchester and its surrounding villages that the facilities are as sustainable as they are inspiring.
And we'll go over to Brian, please, for first person.
And first person this week is by Ron Allison. The passing of two great broadcasters. The original plan for this week's column was to write about that great institution, the BBC, with its future shape, size, management and financing all under review this year. We who value it would do well to consider what might happen. Most important of all is that it should continue to be run from within New Broadcasting House and not by others outside, particularly politicians. That can now wait a while, however, as two remarkable broadcasters, rather than the matter of broadcasting as a whole, occupy my thoughts. The death of Sir Peter O'Sullivan in 97 could not be described as a surprise, but with the news came the overwhelming sense of loss shared far beyond Newmarket, Epsom, Aintree, Ascot, and the entire world of racing. I am not a racegoer, nor a betting man, but I was a broadcaster, and as such listened and learned from the great practitioners wherever possible. And as sports lover in general, it was those masters of art of commentary that I tuned into as often as I could. So it was not only the Derby and the Grand National that I heard described, called, as the Americans have it, by the best of them all. I also watched and listened to the BBC's other racing coverage, spellbound by O'Sullivan's eloquent, informed and ever accurate commentaries. How did he do it? Well, to start with, he had that voice, and to many he was that voice. But that alone would not have been enough. Sheer hard work was the starting point, as it had been his days on the old Daily Express. Having friendships throughout the sport meant few, if any, were better informed, and thankfully for us he knew how to share his knowledge. His preparation before each working day was legendary. The result of it was often perfection. For many years, Sir Peter was one of a team of truly special sports commentators working for the BBC. Henry Longhurst, then Peter Alice, covered golf. Dan Maskell, never using two words when one would do, made tennis commentary his own. Rishi Beno and Brian Johnson meant cricket on television and radio. Kenneth Wolstenholme gave us many football moments to remember, and Bill McLaren had us all dancing in the streets tonight as the winning conversion went over at Twickenham. Add David Coleman to those names, and you've got a remarkable group. But it is Sir Peter O'Sullivan who I consider to be, to quote Burroughs Scott in the Sunday Times, the supreme master of his craft. It was a surprise and an unwelcome one to learn of the death of Cilla Black. She too was a remarkable broadcaster, or the more specific, television genius. Yes, genius, for it takes something and someone very special to front peak time Saturday night light entertainment shows like Surprise Surprise and Blind Date on TV and make it look easy and natural, as did Cilla. We knew her at first, of course, as a singer, a scouser, a friend of the Beatles, and as the girl who put Dionne Warwick's nose out of joint by going up to number one on the charts with Anyone Who Has a Heart in 1964, which Miss Warwick had recorded it for, although Miss Warwick had recorded it first. She most definitely had a Laura talent and was certainly a wonderful entertainer. It seems far too early for her to die at the age of 72, and the very many tributes to her have been no more than she deserved. So for the moment, the future of the BBC remains to be discussed here. I have to admit that writing about people rather than organisations is far more interesting. Sir Peter and Cilla were never dull. The world will be duller without them. So no apologies, really.
And now we come to Bell Garum. Four little items that are supposed to be slightly off the wall. And I'll read the first one. It says, 50,000 festival goers ready to hit the town. Those of you who fancy a tipple next weekend might think about getting your booze order in a little earlier. Next Thursday, nearly 50,000 people will descend on Matterley Bowl, many of whom will come to the city centre to stock up on supplies. Belgarum does find amusement in watching hundreds of backpack-clad revellers clear the shelves of Sainsbury's of all its cider, crisps and biscuits. While the festival might be a bit of a drag to some, Belgarum can't wait to see Stephen Marley and get down to some reggae.
Defaced directions are a sign of the times. Lost art lovers have a cheeky vandal to thank for their difficulty finding an outdoor sculpture show. Motorists on the A3090 or 3090 near Hursley looking for art in the garden found the display themselves directed towards a less savoury excursion after a rogue F was scrawled on the road sign. Art in the garden with an F? Yes, right. Barbara Jones and Helen Taylor took a photo, much to the amusement of residents and social media. Art in the garden continues unsullied at the Sir Harold Hillier Gardens near Romsey until October the 18th.
Roadworks slow speedy drivers down. If Hampshire Police haven't been able to enforce the 20-mile-per-hour speed limit in the city, then perhaps the roadworks along North Walls will. Cars, buses and lorries have been creeping at a snail's pace along the city centre, city centre through road, trying not to dislodge any of the many potential paint-scraping chippings. The road was closed on Monday night for resurfacing works.
And it's going to be closed on several other nights too, isn't it?
Yeah,
or all this week, yeah.
Rears are running rampant. It may be capable of reaching speeds of 40 miles per hour, but it doesn't seem to have gone very far. A large flightless bird, which escaped from its enclosure at South Wanston nearly a month ago, continues to be photographed in a single field near Stoke Charity. This stubbornly unadventurous creature, nicknamed Angus by dog walkers, is one of three rear still on the loose after breakout on July the 8th, the 9th. Angus cage mates have been strutting their stuff miles to the west, with sightings reported as far as up Somborne. All three continue to elude police, who've launched several fruitless attempts at capture with owner Robert Memory. However, these ostrich-like birds have some way to go before they can match the mighty achievements of Ron, a rear who had been dodging bobbies near Odiham for nearly 3 years. Belgarum hopes the recent adoption of body-worn video for Hampshire Police officers can capture these ornithological rescue operations on camera, purely for educational purposes, of course.
We come to What's On, a selection of things taken from the Hampshire Chronicle that you might be interested in the next couple of weeks. On Tuesday, August the 11th, at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime concert at Winchester Cathedral by Claire Jones, who was the Royal Harpist from 2007 to 2011. There's a retiring collection. Outside, in the Cathedral Close, on Friday the 21st of August, there's a performance of the Three Musketeers. Bring seats and a picnic. Tickets are £13.50 for adults and £9 for children, non-refundable even if it pours. They must be booked in advance from the Cathedral box office, and the telephone number is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Then on Saturday, August the 22nd, at the Guildhall, Winchester, there's a charity fashion show in aid of Naomi House and Jack Space. Tickets are £15, or you can include a three-course meal before the show and pay £35. To book for this, ring 07501 215013. That's 07501 215013. And the worthy players are performing Murder by the Book at the Jubilee Hall, Kingsworthy, on two weekends, the 14th and 15th, and the 21st and 22nd of August. Booking is online at www.theworthyplayers.co.uk. Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday the 7th of August, at 5:39 a.m. and begins again at 8:42 p.m. On Wednesday the 12th of August, it ends at 5:47 a.m. and begins at 8:33 p.m. If you know of someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news, and we'll go over to Michael, please, for the first one.
My Clear Blue Sky Thinking is the title of this piece about the Mayor of Winchester, Angela Clear. She's pictured here sitting on a sofa with her mayoral chain, looking very elegant. She's been mistaken for the Queen, prodded as if she were a living statue, and could be the woman to bring Hollywood star Kevin Spacey to Winchester. It's been a busy 2 months for the new mayor. Councillor Angela Clear was handed the robes and chain in May, but says she has yet to acclimatise to the constant photo calls required of the city's ceremonial leader. I just thoroughly enjoy going around and meeting different walks of life, the mayor says, telling the Chronicle of her favourite parts. One day you can be in the Great Hall having a fantastic reception, and the other day, God bless them, I was down at the night shelter with the homeless and they were lovely. They all needed to go in and say, hello, how are you? And they thoroughly enjoy seeing the mayor. They aren't the only ones. Councillor Clear tells of an American tourist who approached her recently outside Abbey House, that's the mayoral residence, and curiously touched her arm. Are you real or do you stand there all day? He said. I think he thought I stood there. I love it. Winchester itself is not entirely familiar territory for Councillor Clear, a city councillor for Wickham who stresses her duty to the entire district. Born in Shortford and a former head teacher of the Fairlands Montessori Private School in Shedfield, she speaks warmly of Wick, Winnall and other city suburbs she has got to know on trips to schools, openings and charity events. I didn't realise how many people are out there doing such good work. And you don't until you're out there with them, she says. They're in the background, working. And without them, I think some things would kind of fall apart. Councillor Clear relishes the role she plays for children who write her letters after her visits. So fired are their imaginations that one asked if she was Queen Elizabeth. It doesn't much bother her. She has a taste for theatrical. Councillor Clear is a fan of Agatha Christie and House of Cards, the murky political drama adopted into a hit US series starring Kevin Spacey. I emailed him once because I said, if you're ever in England in my year as mayor, I'd like you to come, she reveals. Mr. Spacey's agent responded and answered for a reminder and asked for a reminder closer to October when the actor is planning a trip to Britain. Each year, the mayor chooses charities to benefit from their regular fundraising events, including the medieval banquet at the Great Hall. And Councillor Clear has chosen 3 hospices for the terminally ill. Countess Mountbatten in Southampton, Rowan's Hospice in Waterlooville, and Winchester Naomi House and Jack Space. These choices, popular with many mayors, are particularly close to her heart, after the death of her sister Gloria Bowler, from breast cancer. Cancer hits somebody every day in every family. I've been there, I've done it, and I've got the T-shirt, she says, telling of her sister's care at Countess Mountbatten. They're all marvellous. They're all marvellous hospices, but I happen to be in that one. They not only gave her exceptional care, they gave us as a family marvellous care and looked after us. I've always said if I have any way I can repay them, I would always put money in boxes for charities like that. But if there's any way that I can repay them even more, I would do that. And here's the opportunity. Committed to chalk and blackboards during her years in education, Councillor Clear rediscovered her disciplinarian tendencies while chairing city council meetings on the Silver Hill development, where she threatened to eject a group of hecklers. But her natural disposition, the same one needed for Winchester's most public office, is to laugh, chat and smile. At mayor-making in May, guests were told of her desire to dance down Winchester High Street like Gene Kelly and Singing in the Rain. I would love it, Councillor Clear says, pondering the idea as a fundraiser. I do love all that, the Ginger Rogers Fred Astaire. It's fantastic. Perhaps I shouldn't have told you that.
Libel fixer is the first to be jailed. A city trader, raised and educated in Winchester, has become the first man to be jailed for rigging libel rates in a scandal that shook financial markets. Tom Hayes was this week handed a 14-year prison term for his role as the ringmaster in an enormous fraud to manipulate the benchmark interest rates. The 35-year-old was born in London, but moved to a £1.5 million Winchester home in the 1990s with his mother Sandra and stepfather Timothy. He was educated at the Westgate School. Sentencing him at London's Southwark Crown Court, Mr Justice Cook said, "What this case has shown is the absence of that integrity which ought to characterise banking. You, as a regulated banker, succumb to temptation in an unregulated activity because you could. A highly paid ex-trader at UBS and Citigroup, Hayes orchestrated a scheme to interfere with the rate to boost his own six-figure earnings. In an audio clip, he said, influencing LIBOR was commonplace and admitted he was a serial offender. Hayes of Fleet, Hampshire, was found guilty of 8 counts of conspiracy to defraud, covering a period from 2006 to 2010 when he worked for UBS and Citigroup. It took jurors just over a week to reach their verdicts following a 2-month trial. The judge said, you played a leading role in the manipulation of LIBOR. You exerted pressure on others, essentially trained those junior to you in the activity, made corrupt payments to brokers for their assistance. The conduct involved here is to be marked out as dishonest and wrong, and a message sent to the world of banking accordingly. The reputation of LIBOR is important to the city as a financial sector and the banking institutions of this city. Probity and honesty are essential, as is trust. The LIBOR activity in which you played a leading role put all that in jeopardy. A string of banks, including Barclays, Lloyd Banking Group, Royal Bank of Scotland and Deutsche Bank, have been fined billions of pounds for their part in the LIBOR scandal. Dozens of traders have been fired, and one person, whose name and bank cannot be reported, has pleaded guilty to their role. A 2-month trial heard Hayes, who had been on legal aid, was at the helm of a plot to rig LIBOR that struck at the very integrity of that system. Hayes was arrested in the UK in December 2012. Hayes, who has mild Asperger's syndrome, admitted his part and claimed it was not dishonest, and his bosses knew what he was doing.
Sophia's chair is a dream come true. A 5-year-old Winchester girl with cerebral palsy has had a dream come true after the people of Hampshire rallied and raised thousands of pounds to buy her a new wheelchair. Sophia Bischler will taste independence for the first time after a charity-backed appeal reached a target of £3,292 after months of campaigning. The St Peter's Catholic Primary School pupil struggled to get around her with her current heavy walker, which leaves her exhausted over longer distances despite major surgery. Now she'll have a new lightweight model which she can push around the school by herself thanks to the generosity of readers. Her parents, Lucas and Malgazata, said the new chair will be a great improvement in her life. Mr. Bischler said, Sophia's goes to the mainstream school and loves it. She's a very bright little girl and she's doing fine, but a lightweight wheelchair will let her be more independent. The new wheelchair will let Sophia take part in more activities and socialise more with other children. It will make a big difference to us as a family. Sophia was born after 26 weeks of pregnancy. Spastic diplegic cerebral palsy leaves her body weak and limbs stiff. In 2013, aged 3, she underwent £50,000 open spinal surgery in America to mobilise her legs, but she's still left tired trying to push her walker. Her parents of Water Lane received a government grant of £300 for the wheelchair, but couldn't afford the leftover bill of £3,000 alongside physiotherapy and other costs. In April, they turned to the New Life Foundation for Disabled Children, which recently launched a Hampshire fund to help counties disabled and mentally ill children. Stephen Morgan, the charity's head of operations, said, "We're delighted that the people of Hampshire have answered the call, which means Sophia will soon have the lightweight wheelchair she needs to give her more freedom." Sophia is one of 11 children in Hampshire who are in need of vital equipment right now, which will cost a total of £10,095. The equipment they need will change their lives, just like Sophia's new wheelchair will transform her life for her and her family. Donations are still being taken. For more details, telephone 01543 462 777. That's 01543 462 777. And there's a nice little photograph of Sophia with her wheelchair, as the old one, I suppose, there. But she's going to be much happier when she gets her new one.
Restaurant owners open new cuisine. Successful restaurant owners in Winchester have embarked on a new business to further increase their share of the market. Maison Meyer, whose family run the popular Indian eatery Gandhi's, is the new owner and manager of Palm Panacea, a predominantly Thai restaurant which now fills the former site of Blockbuster, which closed 2 years ago. Now the group have opened a new site serving Thai cuisine, tapas and buffet lunches aimed at everyone from small family gatherings to large conference bookings. It opened last week, following months of renovations, including a state-of-the-art new kitchen to get the former shop into a large 110-seat restaurant. Owners carried out a soft launch on existing clients to test out their produce before opening to the public. Mr. Mayer said, because it used to be a retail unit, we had to start from fresh and introduce all the kitchen supplies. We had to get everything out as well as do some structural alterations. When we do the projects, we like to go to town. Everything you see in there is completely new. It's taken about 6 months in all. It follows the refurbishment last year of Gandhi's, which expanded into a two-unit restaurant after they took over a former off-licence next door. The group have signed a 20-year lease on the new property. It will be great for groups, for big corporate groups and large families, Mr. Mayer said. It's more of a casual dining place during the daytime There will be Thai and Southeast Asian lunch and specialist menus for business customers. In the evening, it's going to be more sit-down and formal. It's accompanied by rather a glamorous picture of the staff, the waiting staff, all in rather gorgeous Thai costume.
Youngsters who strove for gold awarded at ceremony. They have completed a raft of challenges that included crewing tall ships, helping at respite centres, and working with rural communities in the Himalayas. Now almost 150 Hampshire youngsters, aged between 17 and 25, have been praised by civic leaders after gaining the Duke of Edinburgh's Gold Award. More than 50 attended the ceremony at the Great Hall in Winchester to receive their certificates from the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson. He praised them for demonstrating the commitment and determination needed to gain the prestigious award. Councillor Jonathan Glenn, Chairman of the County Council, said, "The Duke of Edinburgh Award is an excellent opportunity for young people to challenge themselves and gain an enormous sense of achievement in doing so. The Duke of Edinburgh Award scheme is a national project launched in 1956 to inspire young people to reach new heights. Those aiming to achieve a gold award will typically spend more than 50 hours as a volunteer, as well as taking part in a four-day expedition in terrain classified as wild country." And there's a photo of quite a large group of these remarkable young people looking very proud, as so they should be, with their Gold Award certificates.
Heading here. Pressure is mounting on a housing association to refurbish a former crack house in the heart of Winchester, which has been empty for nearly 3 years. City councillors and property owners are rounding on A2 Dominion over delays to repairing City House opposite Winchester railway station. The not-for-profit group wants to convert its 8 supported flats to market rents. It told the Chronicle last year that work would begin by March, but the building was emptied in May. A former drugs den in the Victorian block has been empty since a police raid in 2012. One property owner, who asked not to be named, said, "It's frustrating and embarrassing to see it in that state. It's a very important building, as it hits you in the eye as you come off the train into Winchester." Ian Tate, former housing portfolio holder, said, "A2 was oblivious to the issue. He said other developers would happily buy the building and develop new supported housing. The firm has repeatedly refused to explain the delay." There's a picture of a rather drab-looking house with a policeman in front of it.
"Come into our gardens and enjoy the beauty of nature." This is accompanied by pictures, photographs of the most gorgeous gardens. Green-fingered Hampshire residents can admire the work of gardeners as private gardens are open to the public this month under the National Garden Scheme. Keen horticulturalists will get two opportunities to visit Willows in Piley Hill or Pilly Hill in Boulder near Lymington this weekend and again on the August bank holiday. Bold borders frame Willows' front lawn, and giant hostas, gunneras and ferns lead up the jungle walk to the upper garden, where dahlias and grasses thrive with the backdrop of hydrangeas. Admission from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. is £3.50. Bramdean House, Bramdean, is also open for visits this Sunday from 2 until 4:30. It boasts a 5-acre garden on chalk, famous for mirror-image herbaceous borders. 1-acre walled garden features prize-winning vegetables, fruit and flowers. Admission £5. Also worth a visit this week is West Silchester Hill, or West Silchester Hall, I should say, Silchester, from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m, where you will find herbaceous borders crammed with rare and unusual plants. And admission there is also £4. The August bank holiday weekend from the 29th to the 31st will be a bumper weekend for open gardens. The Hyde, Old Alsford, will open its gates between 1:30 and 5 p.m. to show off flowing borders with a mixture of perennials, half-hardies, annuals, grasses and shrubs in 3/4 acre garden. Admission, £4. On August the 30th, Gilbert's Nursery, Dandiford Lane in Sherfield, English, is open from 10 to 4 and see more than 300 varieties of dahlias in 1.5 acre field. Admission is £3. Likewise, the Hospital of St Cross, St Cross Road, Winchester, is open for viewing from 2 until 5 p.m. The Medieval Hospital, or St Cross, is one of England's oldest almshouses. The Master's Garden, created in the 17th century by Bishop Compton, contains colourful herbaceous borders, old-fashioned roses, interesting trees and a large fish pond. The Compton Garden has unusual plants of the type he imported, and admission is £4. Children are admitted free, except where stated.
And this is a preview of the Young Critics Scheme at the Theatre Royal. A Winchester Theatre is extending its industry-leading project to encourage youngsters to write about performing arts. Theatre Royal's Young Critics Scheme, which includes workshops led by national journalists and leading theatre critics, will run into the autumn season following widespread support. It offers exciting opportunities to review shows at regional theatres. Participants are provided with mentoring and can see their work in print thanks to a partnership with The Big Issue. Michael Ockwell, Chief Executive of the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton, said, "We are delighted to be working with our colleagues at Theatre Royal Winchester on this wonderful initiative. Informed, relevant and considered criticism is crucial to the development of arts appreciation, and Mayflower Theatre is pleased to play a small role in facilitating enriching discussions for all the participants in the Young Critics Scheme." So far, the programme has attracted a stellar lineup of contributors, including The Guardian's Michael Billington, Britain's longest-serving theatre critic. He said, "I'm delighted to be taking part in a workshop for young critics. I'm very happy both to talk about the critical trade and hand on whatever practical advice I can." The 6-week course begins in September and costs £90. The fee includes all sessions and additional ticket offers to shows. And there's a photograph with this article of a group of potential young critics, and they look like they're pondering over some reviews.
Big success for a little kitchen. A Winchester mum has launched a new bistro north of the city, expanding her established catering company. Kate Sallinson of Elm Road started the Little Kitchen Company 5 years ago, bringing freshly cooked local ingredients to people's homes. Now the mum of three has unveiled the Little Kitchen Bistro in Hebourne Worthy for customers who want the goods but not the washing up. Offering locally sourced lunches, afternoon tea and monthly supper club, the purpose-built property, which is open 7 days a week, is alongside the Winchester Golf Academy. The company has grown from a one-woman show catering for small dinner parties to a flourishing success story, now supplying for weddings, christenings and large corporate parties, as well as events in Henley, Ascot, Lords and Wimbledon. Miss Sanderson, a former regional director with HSBC, said, "I've always been passionate about quality locally cooked and well locally sourced and well cooked food, so being at home when the kids were small was the perfect opportunity for me to put this passion to the test in creating my own catering company. I started off cooking my first business lunch for 4 people in 2011, but my dream was always to have my own premises where I could create delicious, truly local, real food served in relaxed and attractive surroundings. This dream is now reality. I'm proud that this business is taking off in the city I live in, which I love. My staff are local, and we've created a new, fresh and interesting venue supporting local growers and businesses. This is a really versatile space. We welcome parents and kids for daytime coffee and cakes, those who are looking for a lovely lunch with wine from our carefully chosen list, and golfers from the attached driving range. We also cater for private events and host open events such as wine tasting. We have loads of parking, a mini putting green, a kids' menu, disabled access, and the large sunlit patio is glorious for relaxation al fresco dining. I wish I knew who this was. And there are two photographs of three very attractive ladies. That is Victoria Stevens, owner, Kate Stevens, Salenson, and Lucy Martin, at the launch party for the Little Kitchen Bistro in Headbourne Worthy. And there's another picture of people with drinks, so I won't talk about that one.
I think the Golf Academy, I was told, was on the road between the Good Life Shop and Three Maids Hill.
Oh.
That road that goes up there. So I think it must be round there.
Oh. Sounds
on
good.
The fringe of Kings Worthy sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Does. Right. It's a success story, we hope, and here is a jobs lost as retail shop loses battle to stay open. A luxury clothing retail company has shut up shop in Alsford after the firm went into administration. More than a dozen jobs have been lost after owners of Spirit of the Andes announced they had appointed administrators on July the 20th. It is believed that the Broad Street shop is now closed, along with stores in Lavenham in Suffolk, Oakham in Rutland, and Ludlow in Shropshire. One of the administrators, Mark Ranson of Armstrong Watson, said the business failed following a number of years of loss-making trading, partially brought about by being committed to property leases on the loss-making shops. The administrators are continuing to trade the business. The retail estate is currently being rationalised to create a business which will be attractive to potential purchasers. News of the administration was confirmed in a statement on the company's website. It said, "The affairs, business and property of the company are being managed by the joint administrators as agents of the company and without personal liability. As a result of the administration, goods are sold as seen and the company is not able to offer a refund for any unwanted items." No one from the Alsford store was available for comment when contacted.
Station vision in the dark. Commuters grab their morning coffee while they wait for the train. Students cycle into town and business chiefs look on to a new public park where families play. That is the vision of six Hampshire students who have released a video which can be watched on our website, hampshirechronicle.co.uk, showing how they would revitalise the gateway to Winchester. Students from the University of Southampton have created plans for the city's station approach development, which council bosses hope will attract big business to the ageing area. Their plans include a new square outside the train station, office blocks to attract major firms, new cycle paths, and a roundabout replacing one of the city's busiest junctions. They are the first proposals to be revealed ahead of a design competition for the Winchester City Council scheme. But architects helping the students have warned that they are operating in the dark and need more information about the area. Paul Bulkley, director of Snug Architects, said, "By far the most significant users of the site are Peter Simmons students, and they barely get a mention. The powers that be are middle-aged people. Car parking gets a lot of mentions. Commuters get a lot of mentions. Tourists get a lot of mentions, but where they don't have anywhere near the amount of people coming through is the students. The civil engineering and architecture students conducted short surveys of the site, monitoring who used the area and where they went." Mr. Bulkley added, "I think the students have shown that there needs to be better research. Youth-friendly proposals include wider pavements and a cycle path on Andover Road, connecting the station to Peter Simmons College and the new Barton Farm Estate. Sixth formers will be encouraged to shop in the area and eat lunch at the station plaza, which could also include an evening market for commuters. Plans to retain the Cattle Market car park and create a new open space over the top are likely to be welcomed by residents who are angered by the prospect of tall new buildings on their doorstep. The video also shows how concealing the City Road junction from the station will direct pedestrians into town via Upper Hill Street. A slip road between Andover and City Roads will avoid the new roundabout. Mr. Bulkley said, "This is about developing the whole area to make sure it gets a buzz going." And there are three, there's a photograph of the station looking up to the railway station on Station Hill. And there are two computer generated images, one looking east over station with the new car park, and the final one looking north across Cattle Market Square.
Farming gets a boost. A strategic partnership has been launched to help boost business for Hampshire farmers. Hampshire Farmers Markets and the Campaign to Protect Rural England's Hampshire branch have come together to promote awareness of their organisations. Alex Hanford, HFM Business Development Manager, said, "We're already having 8 regular markets across the county each month and also have markets at other special events throughout the year. Our markets are a perfect place for our new strategic partners to meet like-minded people who'd be interested in the work of the CPRE. Our strategic partnerships are all about working with organisations that have similar goals to those of the Hampshire Farmers Markets to benefit our producers and farmers and the county as a whole. Working in alliance with CPRE Hampshire means that together we have a stronger voice. As a strategic partner of CPRE Hampshire, we'll seek to promote the others' activities to our respective members. Most recently, CPRE Hampshire and volunteers have been showcasing their work at selected Hampshire farmers' markets, as well as promoting HFM at their events, including New Forest and Hampshire County Show. Staff at Lyburn Cheeses, a long-standing member of HFM, have also been celebrating their own promotion after getting a visit from Strictly Come Dancing judge Len Goodman, who turned up to film part of his new TV programme called Holiday of My Lifetime. The documentary show, started in 2014, takes famous faces back in time to recreate their childhood holidays. This episode saw lovable Len interviewing Janet Ellis as she recalled visiting a dairy farm near Romsey. Mike Smales of Lyburn Cheeses said, "The BBC were filming for a few hours with Len and Janet and enjoyed helping to make some of our stony cross cheese. The programme is due to be transmitted sometime in October." And there's a picture of 5 very happy, smiling people with blue aprons on, all part of the group, and also Alex Hanford and Michael Riscourt, who run farmers' markets.
And there's Len Goodman there, isn't there, too? Isn't he there with a blue thing on him?
Is Len... No, I don't think...
Oh, yes, this is Len.
No, Len Goodman, sorry, centre man. Oh, yes, sorry, that's him. I missed him. He's quite tall.
I should have picked him out.
Thank you.
I know, you know, I watch Strictly avidly.
Going fibre optic... Well, almost 60,000 homes across Hampshire are now benefiting from superfast broadband. County Council chiefs say that 58,200 homes and businesses have benefited from their superfast broadband programme, and another 38,000 will within the next 3 years. The council and its partners launched a £28 million programme to connect 97,000 premises that would otherwise have been left out by the commercial rollout of broadband. Their ambition is to ensure that 95% of homes and businesses across Hampshire have access to high-speed broadband by September 2018. The programme reached its target of 54,000 premises by the end of the last financial year, allowing more residents to access internet speeds ranging from 24 to 76 Mbps. And I expect, like me, you're waiting for an explanation. MHPS is a megabytes per second. So now you know. Superfast broadband is delivered to people's homes by fibre optic cables as opposed to the older copper cables. And the fibre ones have no upper limit for internet speed. Councillor leader Roy Perry said by the end of 2015, around 91% of premises will be connected. And we are well placed to take action to further extend the existing programme. I now look forward to the government's proposal on how to address the final 5%, ensuring the whole of Hampshire can benefit. Communities that fall outside the council's programmes are being invited to bid for some of the £400,000 worth of funding to self-fund superfast broadband. Successful bids could see up to 50% of the total cost provided by the council's grant, with a limit of £500 per premises. People living in an area not yet scheduled to receive better broadband are urged to contact the council to register their interest. The scheme will be launched November the 1st, when more details will be published.
Discretions for speeding to go. The margin for error for speeding is being tightened up by some police forces. Is this fair, and can it be enforced? Most drivers stick within the speed limit, while a small margin for error has historically been allowed by the police for anyone who might unwittingly exceed the limit by a small amount. Traditionally, this has been set at 10% plus 2 miles per hour of the posted speed limit. So in a 50 mile per hour zone, that's 5 miles per hour plus an extra 2 before the police will issue a speeding fine. However, some police forces are now set to do away with any discretion and margin for error. The reason for this, they say, is to improve road safety at a time when the number of road deaths and serious injuries has risen for the first time in decades. Another reason is the far greater accuracy of the equipment the police now uses to measure speed, as well as the increased use of average speed cameras that can offer a much more precise measurement with less likelihood of any mistake. While the safety benefits of drivers staying within the posted speed limit are obvious, road safety campaigners say this could lead to many drivers spending more time watching their speedometers rather than the road ahead. This could have major consequences for the type of collision, with an increase in the number of cars driving into the back of other vehicles as drivers do not pay attention to what is in front of them. Edmund King, president of the AA, says, "We need drivers to concentrate on what is on the road in front of them, not always looking at the speedo. If a driver strays over the limit by 2 miles per hour, they shouldn't be, but it's better they do that than stay focused on what is going on around them." Another reason campaigners are concerned about such rigid and unbending enforcement is that it could tie courts up in endless paperwork. Even with automatically generated fines, the courts still have to process each case. Not all police officers are convinced the move to zero tolerance is a good idea. Some say it will take up all of their time to enforce, leading to other offences being left unattended. Also, many officers worry it will create a divide between the police and drivers. That means motorists will be unwilling to assist the police in other matters. For many drivers, the change in speeding policy will not be a concern. But for anyone who drives at the legal permitted speed limit, a moment's loss of concentration could prove very expensive. And there's a large picture of a speed camera with this article.
Bars battle it out to be the best. Businesses in Winchester will soon be battling it out in a bid to claim they're the best bar none. Launched for the first time last year, the citywide scheme aims to recognise pubs and bars which actively work to help reduce crime, increase customer safety and improve the overall nightlife for Winchester and consumers. It was designed in line with the existing national award scheme, which will see the overall winner in Winchester join hundreds of others shortlisted for the coveted prize to be unveiled in September. There are 10 popular bars, pubs and clubs in the running, and they, I can't see who they are. Each site will be visited by two assessors, as organised by Andrew Hodgson, bar manager of Winchester Student Union, and Jane Bastock, crime reduction officer at Winchester Business Improvement District. Miss Bastock said, taking part in this award encourages businesses to share best practice, build work relationships with the police and authorities, and the scheme keeps businesses constantly on the lookout for new innovation ideas.
Funeral of Hanged Child Rights Father. The life of a Winchester dad who fought for children's rights is to be celebrated tomorrow as mourners gather to say farewell. A funeral will be held for Hayden Burton, who was found hanging in his cell at Winchester Prison on July the 15th. Since the news of his death, tributes have been paid on social media and on temporary boards on empty high street shops. A candlelit vigil was held last Friday outside the former sports shop for the 42-year-old, often seen in a Superman onesie and with a megaphone calling for law changes on children's rights. There's a picture of him here in front of what looks like the Guildhall, perhaps, in his onesie with a notice which says, "Honk if you support children's rights." An inquest was opened by the coroner, Graham Short, for Mr. Burton, formerly of Wolf Close Stanmore, whose death was confirmed 3 days after he was found and taken to Royal Hampshire County Hospital. An inquiry has been launched into his death and that of another man, Darrell Hargrave, 22, of Gosport, who was found dead just a few days later. The funeral of Mr. Burton, who was due to be sentenced at Winchester Crown Court for possession of an offensive weapon, criminal damage to a police cell and being antisocial, will be at the South Downs Natural Burial Site in East Meon at 12 p.m.
Food festival set to be the best one yet. A Meon Valley food fair will be even bigger and better when it returns this summer, say organisers. Taste of Wickham Festival is set to feature nearly 60 stalls, including florists, crafters, butchers, bakers, as well as live music showcasing local talent. The Southern Cooperative has been confirmed as the main supporter of the event, and chefs will incorporate its ingredients into their recipes while giving demonstrations to visitors. Ben Sawyers, the chairman of the organising team, said, "After the success of last year's festival, we have been inundated with applications from many different local producers and businesses, all wanting to participate in this year's festival. We have done our best to include a wide and interesting variety of stalls while ensuring that this really is a taste of Wickham and not just another market. The event will be held at Wickham Square from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Sunday, September the 13th, with activities for all ages."
Model on display. A model of Victorian Winchester built by a former planning chief is on display at an historic landmark. Built by Roger Brown after he retired as chief planning officer at Hampshire County Council, it represents the city as it would have looked in 1870. Mr. Brown, who was in his 90s, died earlier this year without his wish of seeing the model in permanent home fulfilled. It took 9 years to craft and measures 15 feet wide. Although originally intended to form a basic of a display, the plan was never completed. The model is on display in the Great Hall until August 24th, opening hours 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editor, Tom Williams. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
Maria Head.
Bye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye, and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you. Goodbye.